have anything to lose. I have no secrets to hide. I can just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Truth and Justice. In today's episode, I'm joined by two very special guests. As most of you know, Eric and I are currently on the search for our next case to be covered in Season 17. As we wait, impatiently, for the Michigan Attorney General's Conviction Integrity Unit to take action on Jody's case, our work, as always, continues. A few weeks ago, Erica selected a case from our website submissions that led us to Dr. Nikki Jackson at the Purdue University Center for Justice and Post-Exoneration Assistance. Earlier this week, we made the trip to her office and spent the day with Dr. Jackson and exoneree Tim Donald to discuss the case as well as the work that they do at their center. Once we were done with the case discussion, we turned on the recorder for a conversation with Dr. Jackson and Tim. Here's that interview.
I'm Dr. Nikki Jackson. I'm a professor at Purdue University Northwest. I run our criminal justice program. Been here for 35 years. About 2.5 years ago, I established the Center for Justice and Post-Exoneration Assistance at Purdue University Northwest. And I am here today with my project manager, Mr. Timmy Donald.
Hello. Thanks for having me. My name is Timmy Donald. I'm an exoneree, and I'm proud to be here today.
Timmy was a big part of how this your organization came together. I'm not going to try to put the whole salad out, but Timmy was part of how you guys started this organization, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So I had read a story about Timmy in 2016, goes way back, in the newspaper that he had been wrongly convicted, did not know him. And I reached out to his attorney and asked if Timmy would be willing to meet me. And literally the diner next door, or two doors down, he agreed to meet with me. We sat down and we talked. And Timmy, his brother-in-law, did all of the talking. Timmy just had been out 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. He was just out after serving 24 years for crimes he did not commit. Timmy's never been in trouble with the law. So anyway, I made a lot of promises to Timmy, and including that I would be working on getting a compensation bill here created in Indiana. So he would get some funds and other exonerees would get funds. So I really worked with Timmy in helping him, you know, just try to reenter this crazy world after 24 years. And I'm honored and I'm really humbled that he trusted me enough to allow me to be part of that journey. So Timmy and I were in People magazine. And after we were in People magazine, I started getting hundreds of letters from inmates all over the country asking for help. And each letter represented an actual person. And I contacted my friend, the owner of the Indiana Pacers, Steve Simon, told him about all of these letters. And he said, come to the Pacers office, meet me. And I went, and I'd never met Steve at that point. So I went and I showed him all of the letters. I threw them out on the table. And he said, I'll help fund you, and you can start a center to help people like Timmy after they get out of prison. So Mr. Simon and the university together funded us and gave us enough for 2 years. And I just hosted a fundraising event in September, and that's going to last us probably another year or two.
So is all the work you do here, because we just spent today going over a case that we're likely going to be taking on for our season 17 if things work out. And I saw your file cabinet over there full of cases that you guys are working on. So you do work with people helping transition after they get out, but that's not all you do.
No. We have four pillars. One is education. We have gone to different high schools and talked about how to prevent a wrongful arrest from occurring to particularly marginalized communities. And we have also done community forums, talked to the community, brought different exonerees in. In fact, when Timmy got released, one of the first things we did shortly after he got out was I hosted an event And we had about, I don't know, 150, 200 people in the audience. And we talked about what happened to Timmy and to some other exonerees. At the time, I think they were the exonerees of, I'm sure you've heard of John Burge.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a couple of those folks at that event. And last year, we were very, very fortunate. We received a grant to do police trainings, first in the state of Indiana. Nobody's ever done any trainings with police or prosecutors. I applied for a grant. We got it, and we did trainings at 6 police departments here in Lake County. Went in and talked to them about what a wrongful conviction is, explained that our work is really looking at people who are factually innocent, not people who are wrongly convicted based on a procedural error. We are focused solely on people like Mr. Donald, who were innocent people and spent years in prison, decades, for crimes that, you know, he didn't commit. So we did the police trainings, and some of the departments were very resistant, nervous, because I remember one chief said, "Are you going to come in and blame my officers?" I'm like, "No, I'm not coming in to blame anybody. I'm here to help educate, because I think as a law enforcement officer, you don't want to arrest the wrong person." So we talk about the contributing factors. We focus, obviously, on police work and what police can do to try to prevent, you know, a wrongful arrest from happening. Timmy went with me to 5 of the 6. I did not ask him to go to the Gary Police Department, their training. I took another exoneree. I wasn't going to have him have to re-victimize him, have to relive the nightmare he's already gone through.
Gary was where Tim was wrongfully convicted.
Wrongfully arrested.
Right, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So I didn't even ask him. That wasn't even in the conversation. And later he thanked me for not making him go. And I would never make him go. And, you know, that kind of trauma to him again. So we gave them pretests to see how, and we interviewed. This is really what's so cool about our training. We had in our program the chief all the way down to the patrol officers. Some of the departments, the chief wasn't there, but most of the departments, the chief was there. And I will tell you, the one chief who said, "Are you going to blame my officers? Are you going to yell at them?" He came up to me afterward and said this was the best experience he's had for his officers, and he thanked me for being there.
Right.
And that's what we want, right? Mm-hmm. We want to work with police.
Right.
I don't think police are out there trying to wrongly arrest people, right? So we want to help them and make sure that when they arrest somebody, they're arresting the right person, right? So that's part of our work, is the education piece. We work on policy reform. About a year and a half ago, I testified here before the Senate on the Reed technique, as I'm sure you're familiar with the Reed technique.
Yep.
So I testified that juveniles should not be lied to during custodial interrogation. So deception should not be used. And I was told that my testimony was pretty convincing. And I'm proud to say that that bill was passed. I would like to see it extend to adults with mental deficiencies. You could be 30 years old, but you could be functioning at a 12-year-old level. Well, this bill would not recognize that individual.
Right.
And it should.
Well, still, that bill is great. I didn't realize that had happened in Indiana.
Yeah, yeah, I'm so happy.
So in Indiana, police cannot, you know, with the Supreme Court ruling that allows them to lie during interrogation, they're not allowed to be deceptive to juveniles.
Nope.
That's amazing. That would save so many wrongful convictions.
That's
just
right.
Ones that have come across my desk.
Right. And one of the authors of the bill, Senator Pohl, I'm really proud that he worked on this bill. And I just happened to talk to him. I called him about something, and he said, "Do you want to come testify? It's tomorrow." So I was literally driving to Illinois. I turned around, drove to Indianapolis. I was going to be there to testify because it's something we've been talking about for a long time. So yeah, in Indiana, police officers can no longer use deception during juvenile interrogations.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. Great. But I want to extend it. I want to extend it. And I'm having a little bit of a struggle getting folks to understand that it's important that, you know, if we believe that a minor can't make the right decisions and can't think the way an adult thinks and process things the way an adult does, it should extend then to adults who are functioning.
Well, the problem even with their quote normal adult and their functioning is people don't have an understanding of wrongful conviction or false confessions and how they happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it shouldn't be allowed at all.
I pushed for that, Timmy, and I talked about that. Here's what I always say. We can't lie to the police. why should they be able to lie to us? And nobody should be going to prison based on lies.
Yeah.
Right?
I tell people all the time on our podcast, I have the Reed Technique textbook in my office. And it's like on the, in the first chapter of that, it says that the Reed Technique interrogation model is psychological warfare. It says that in the text, that that's what it is. So people that don't understand, like, why would somebody, it shouldn't matter if they lie to them, because why would somebody confess to something they didn't do? And as you know, I've worked a lot with Jim Tranum over the years, who's a, you know, false confession expert. And he said, people don't, there is some gun that you can hold to anyone's head and get them to say what you want them to say. Everybody, it's a different gun for everybody.
That's
but it's
right.
There.
Yeah. And listen, you know, we have exonerees that we're friends with who've been held in interrogation at 16 years of age for 11 hours, 12 hours, no food, no bathroom breaks, or they're given, like Jeff Deskovic, he was given tons of coffee to drink.
Right.
You know, and do you know Jeff?
60. Yeah, I know
Jeff. Yeah, Jeff was 16 and wrongly convicted for a rape and murder, right? And he didn't commit it. And he falsely confessed because, you know, at some point, you're going to break.
Right.
It is. In fact, if you read my book, you'd see we talk about the Reed Technique, and I actually talk about how many of the exonerees experience similar traits as prisoners of war.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody should be able, no officer should be able to use deception, in my opinion, during interrogations. But that's just me,
right.
You know? And I understand the police are like, if we can get you to confess and you know, you did it, we want to know. But there's got to be a better method. In fact, I think that the gentleman who created the Reed Technique said that it's being used not in the way that he had wanted it to be used.
It's an extremely effective tool to get someone to confess. But the side effect that I think it was Dr. Reed that created it, the side effect that wasn't expected was that it was so effective that it will get people to confess to things that they didn't do.
Yeah, that's...
And that's really, really hard for people to wrap their brain around.
It is. And I don't think most people understand that people under certain conditions will confess to something that they didn't do.
Right.
You know, you and I sitting here right now in this environment would say, no, I wouldn't confess to it, but we're not in the same conditions that these folks are thrown in. So anyway, yes, we in Indiana have this bill. I'd love to see it, as I've said several times, extended, and I'm hoping that that's going to happen. I'm hoping a legislator will hear this podcast and say, yeah, that makes some sense. Let's do it. The other thing we work on here is, as you've seen the files, we investigate claims of innocence. There's a process. Cases are sent to us by primarily through the mail. And then, as I've mentioned to you before, there's nobody who has a better lens for a wrongful conviction than somebody who's been wrongly convicted.
Right.
So every time I get a letter, I hand it over to Mr. Donald. He reviews it. And then we have interns. We have students who work on some of these cases with us. And they'll review it and they'll come to me and say, you know what? I think this case merits further review. And if that's the case, I just tell Timmy, send an intake form. We create an intake form, send it off and have them complete it and then get it back to us. And that's what we do. And then Timmy and I will discuss whether this case is something we want to pursue. The other thing, the fourth thing that we do is post-exoneration assistance. We help exonerees and their families, which is something I don't think anybody else is doing. We help them with reunification. I don't think a lot of folks understand that families are separated. The families are suffering just like their loved one who's incarcerated. They're also like really serving a sentence. Timmy lost his father while he was incarcerated. His sister, his sisters, his mother, they all suffered along with him, lost a lot of money. They don't sue. They can't sue. They can't recoup the financial losses that they've experienced, which I think is ridiculous. So we help them and also rebuilding relationships. I have some clients in other states who their mothers and their children have been taught for years that their mother killed their father or whatnot. And we're working on trying to unify those individuals, those families. We help with job assistance, resumes. We've helped several with just crafting resumes. Our students do it. I mean, I wish I could say I did it, but it wasn't me or Timmy. It was the students. They're pretty remarkable. We've helped with finding them jobs. Dental care has been really one of our big things. It sounds kind of crazy,
Well, it's interesting because we talked earlier about Ed H., one of the guys that we got out of from Texas. And that was one of the things that we had a big struggle with. He had such terrible teeth because of the care in prison. And so we had to work with dentists and orthodontist surgeons, because he had a ton of work that had to be done. Luckily, our listeners kind of stepped up and made connections. Amazing. And helped donate to get that stuff done. But yeah, it was something I never thought of, but it's yeah, real dental care for them.
Timmy actually missed the signing. I was at the governor's office for the compensation bill. And I was like, where is he? Why is he not here? And I called him and he's like, I have a toothache. My tooth is hurting really bad. Timmy's had a lot of dental issues. And there's a dentist who has provided him tens of thousands of dollars of pro bono dental work. And mm-hmm. he's asked not to be identified. I think he does this because he says he can and he wants to do something, you know, and he really likes Timmy. And so he's helped Timmy, but we also have other clients who've needed dental work. One exoneree needed just some cleaning, and I think he needed a cavity filled, but he was so traumatized, something that happened during childhood, that he needed to be knocked out. So now I had to find some anesthesiologist to come in and knock him out during the cleaning and that. So it wasn't just finding the dentist. And so I've explained who I am. I feel like a salesman sometimes, right?
Right.
Like I have to go out and I have to sell what we're doing. And I think once people understand what we're doing, they understand. Because think about this, and I know you know this, and I'm sure your listeners know this, but there are no real re-entry assistance efforts for people who are factually innocent. So like Timmy, when he got out of prison, after 24 years, there wasn't anything available for him. He was not eligible for parole like somebody who actually committed a crime. So the irony is, if you commit a crime, we have services to help you re-enter in society. But if you didn't commit the crime and we didn't, oops, and locked you up, we got nothing for you.
Right.
That's shameful.
There's so many barriers there, and I'll have Timmy talk about it in a minute. But when they like just losing 20, you think about where, you know, I learned this a lot with Ed when he got out, like what happened with technology over those 20 years, like how far behind, not just with the money and not just with finding a job and trying to, you know, restart your life, but it's a completely different world when you come out. For you, how long have you been out, Timmy?
Eight
years. It's coming up in January.
Nine.
It'll be 9 years in January.
Yeah, man.
Is it 9 years?
Coming up in January.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So you went through that. You were locked up during that time where technology just completely changed. There were no cell phones when you got locked up.
No cell phones.
Yeah. Even the internet. Right. What year did you get locked up?
92.
Yeah, 92. So there was no internet. There was no cell phones. There was none of that. And so you got to come. But yeah, and there's, you know, we were lucky enough with Ed and Timmy having you and what is now your organization had people that were there to help make that transition. But so many people come out and they don't have that.
Well, it's interesting you say that because you asked me earlier, you know, how did we get this, right? I'm going to tell you just very quickly how this happened. When Timmy called me one day and he said, you know, he was grateful to have me. And he calls me Mrs. Jackson, never calls me Dr. Jackson, never calls me Professor Jackson, never calls me Nikki. It's always Mrs. Jackson. Yeah. Don't know why, but he's nobody else does but him.
Yeah.
So he said to me one day, not everybody has a Mrs. Jackson. And I will never forget that. And I remember crying my eyes out and thinking about it. And I thought, okay, I'm able to help one man. This is amazing. But he's feeling bad for all of the other people who've mm-hmm. been wrongly convicted and exonerated who don't have that support.
Right.
And so I said to him, well, let's change that. And here we are.
That's amazing.
It's really how it all began.
Everything, all the four pillars of everything you guys are doing, I want to real quick touch on, because I don't think, unless I missed it, you didn't touch it on it during the interview here.
No.
The legislation that you worked on, I think you just brushed on it about the compensation plan. Where is that and what are you working on?
Oh, it was passed in, I think, 2019. It was passed. And basically in Indiana, if you're factually innocent and you've been wrongly convicted, you can apply for compensation. It's not an automatic. So the premise is great, but there's still some issues with it. I think the author of the bill was incredible and a very compassionate man. And he knew that he had to like have certain language in this bill. But at the end of the day, if you've been in prison and you were wrongly convicted, you if factually innocent, you can apply, and it's $50,000 per year. The first go around, they wanted $25,000 a year. I got a call and said, you should look, we've got a bill up. And then when I heard it was $25,000 and it would not grandfather in people like Timmy, I said, no, I'm not testifying before any committee. I'm not going to bring him. This is not fair. So a year later, I actually took the prosecutor in Lake County, Bernie Carter. He went with me and he said he supported, and I know he does support that if you've been wrongly convicted, that you should be compensated. The issue that I have is basically these exonerees are going back through a trial.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go before a panel and prove that they were innocent of something. They have to go back and talk before...
Even after they've been exonerated.
Yeah, even after they've been exonerated. They have to go back before this panel and they have to prove their innocence.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, as a victimologist, is re-victimizing them all over again. And quite frankly, they don't have the resources to go and find all of the people,
right
that they need to find. But I do know that some exonerees have been given compensation, which has been incredible. But the state of Indiana, after what, almost 9 years, has not paid Timmy a penny. He has not received a penny from the state of Indiana.
Well, on that line, Timmy, whatever you're comfortable talking about, can you share like what your case was and how you got exonerated?
Yes. I was, in 1992, I was convicted of a murder, robbery, and a robbery, and sentenced to 60 years of prison.
And then how did your conviction eventually get overturned?
One night, I was having sleeping issues while I was in prison. One night, I couldn't sleep, so I was watching this television show. It was about a man on death row that was wrongly convicted, and that he wrote an innocent project, and that eventually helped him get released. I just pinned down everything that happened in my case, and I just sent it to all the innocent projects in the United States, and they wrote back and told me that my case sounded interesting, but they had the resources to reach me. By this time, a Deal Innocent Project in Northwestern contacted me, and they took on my case.
So the Medell Innocence Project is really what saved the day here for Timmy. And it was, again, as I mentioned to you before, a group
and Thomas Vaines.
Undergraduate students. And then a local attorney, Tom Vaines, took on his case, and he was the one to help get him exonerated.
Was it a DNA exoneration? Or?
I did have DNA in my case, but they told me that it was a part of my case, but I got exonerated on a witness recantation, prosecutor misconduct, and police misconduct.
So basically, there were Brady violations in his case, and there was DNA. I'm going to just kind of clean that up a little bit, but there was DNA in the case that the man who had been killed during the course of one of the robberies, there was a tussle. And he was wearing a jacket, and there was DNA on that jacket that did not belong to Timmy. So we know that Timmy wasn't there, but that was not what the basis of his exoneration was.
Mm-hmm.
It was this victim recantation. One of the students, I'm going to back up a little bit. When Timmy got arrested because his picture was thrown in a photo lineup. That photo was there because 3 years prior to these murders, he had been with a friend in a car. Police pulled them over because it looked like they had tampered with the lock, which they had. Was it a screwdriver that he was using?
Yeah.
To drive? Okay, so there was a screwdriver. So police legitimately pulled him over, right? They pulled him over, got to the police station. They took his mugshot. Did they take fingerprints also?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fingerprints, mugshot of him and his friend. Timmy asked the police officer, can we call my friend's uncle who loaned us the car? They said yes. They called. The uncle showed up with all the papers, right? And so they sent him on their merry way. Timmy thought that was it. We're done, right? Just borrowed the car. Well, 3 years later, that picture they took of him, that mugshot, was thrown into this lineup of 5 robberies and a murder. And there were witnesses in these 5 robberies. In fact, one is a former Gary police officer who said, this is not the guy. This isn't him. But there were two witnesses. One was the wife or fiance of the man who was killed, who saw him. They had just gotten home from dinner or somewhere or shopping, and they had their children with them. And the assailant pulled the gun on Mr. Jimenez, and Mr. Jimenez threw like a park bench or something at like a picnic bench or something at the assailant. And then there was a tussle. And she then identified Timmy in the photo lineup. And we were later told that she was really kind of prompted to pick out the picture. And then the other victim said she wasn't sure, but maybe it was him. But all the other ones said, no, it wasn't him. A few days after the murder and robberies, and these all happened within, 45 minutes? It was a very quick period of time. Then the one woman who identified him called the police and said that she sees the actual robber in front of her house. And the police go to Timmy's work. His supervisor, you know, says, here's his time card. He was here during the time of the phone call from that victim. And the police never disclosed that. Oh, or wow. Did they disclose it to the prosecutor?
That was the first Brady
violation. So that was the first Brady violation. And the students at Medill Innocence Project at Northwestern found that note. Pretty incredible. They found the woman who is now living in Florida. They called her and she said, I've been waiting for this call for over 20 years. They have the wrong man. And I told them that they had the wrong man. And she'd been living with that. And I don't think a lot of people understand how witnesses and victims are also impacted by a wrongful conviction, right? She had been dealing with this for so long because nobody really listened to her at the beginning, right? So she suffered also. And Timmy holds no ill will toward her. We've talked about it, and he holds no ill will. He said to me before that she's a victim just like I was in this nightmare. Mm-hmm. Pretty incredible. Pretty incredible.
And there's so many of them that are just like that too.
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, and we felt like the case we just finished up, you know, same thing. It was a witness who gave this ridiculous testimony at trial. And it was, you know, 20 years later, 23 years later, we go knock on her door and I just asked, all I did was say, tell me what happened that night. And she told me the truth about what happened that night. And I'm like, well, why did you say this? The cop told me to say that.
And that's what folks don't understand.
Yeah.
And while most police, I think, are very, very good, I think I have good relationship with police. I think people think I don't like the police. I do like the police. I really do like the police. I don't like bad police.
Right.
And there is a
difference. Tell people, I get the same thing. And I always tell people, nobody hates bad cops more than good cops.
Man, have you seen my PowerPoint? That's on my police training PowerPoint.
Yeah.
I was in the governor's office for the signing of that juvenile deception bill. And there was a man sitting and I'm talking to him and he's security for the governor. And he asked who I was. And I told him, you know, who I was. I'm a professor and run the center for people who've been wrongly convicted. And he said, there's nobody who hates a bad cop more than me, you know, a good cop. And so I love that. So I said, can I use that? Can I quote you? And he gave me his name and info and I have it on my PowerPoint slide.
That's always been my experience. But I love the idea too, that you guys do this education for police. I just had a conversation with a police officer that I know we're presenting to a group separately. And I was talking about how it was young people, do not talk to the police without an attorney present. It is your constitutional right. You do not. And then she gets up afterwards. She's like, listen, it's fine. We're just here to help. And you should talk. And you know, she's doing what she thinks is right. But it's like, I talked to her afterward. I'm like, do you really, you just told those kids that they look guilty if they exercise their constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. That makes that, like, that's not okay to do. That's how this shit happens.
Right. Well, I think what the reality is also that people like, you know, Timmy, who are innocent, even though his was not a false confession, he always maintained his innocence. But for others who falsely confess, they talk to police. Everybody talks to police. If you're innocent, you're like, I have nothing to hide.
Right.
I have nothing to hide. So sure, if you ask me a few questions, of course I'm going to answer because I didn't do anything wrong. And then you get tripped up during the interrogation. And I don't think people understand. In fact, I always tell students and I tell people when I speak, even lawyers who've been arrested have a lawyer
right
sitting there with them. It's important.
Well, and it's the general public doesn't understand how the Reeve technique works.
Yeah.
So there's so many innocent people sitting in prison right now because they just wanted to help. But that's like part of the process. Like they're like, I'm going to get you to put something on the record. I'm going to get you to say something. I'm going to find an inaccuracy. I'm going to lean on it. Now I'm going to get you flustered and I'm going to get you uncomfortable because now you've just lied to the police, even though it wasn't really an intentional lie. And then they just, it's just this snowball effect to don't do it without a lawyer present. But I just thought it was interesting, that conversation with that she legitimately thought like, no, like people, why are you telling people that they should talk to the police? I'm like, no, they shouldn't. That right is there for a reason. And I wish like
use it.
That there was more with the, you know, Mirandizing people. I hate whenever we get, it's always a wrongful conviction, listening to like an interrogation tape and you hear the Miranda warnings. Like, all right, we got to read you this.
Yep.
Before we talk to you, you have the right to an attorney. I mean, if you waive these, if you want to help us, you just need to waive these rights. And like, you know, they just kind of talk them into it instead of really explaining like, listen, you actually
have this right.
You do not need to talk to me. You are free to go. You can have an attorney present.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. I think it's become so routine that, and we've all heard the Miranda warnings on TV,
right?
My students can recite it from watching. I can do it from watching TV, right? So we all know what our Miranda warnings are, but do we really understand them? And I think that's what's so important. And I share with my students, you really have to understand what your constitutional rights are. They're there for a reason and use them. Use them. It doesn't mean you're guilty.
Yeah.
Just because you ask for a lawyer does not mean you're guilty. But we have to get past that. Because I think a lot of people think, well, why'd they ask for a lawyer? Why did they ask for a lawyer if they didn't do anything?
Smart.
That's right.
I would say that the best evidence that people don't understand Miranda is I get these calls all from people I know. Like somebody might get, I knew somebody that got picked up for a DUI. And he's like, they arrested me, but they never read me my Miranda rights. So it's the arrest is invalid, right? I'm like, no, that's TV.
They did not need to
Mirandize you to throw your ass in the back of a squad car.
That's
like,
right.
That's not right. What that's for.
You have to understand that the Miranda warnings are all about custodial interrogation.
Right.
Right. And so people don't even understand what that means. In fact, I don't even know if everybody understands. I don't know if I really understand what does custodial interrogation mean. I mean, that's part of, in one of my classes, we break it down. What does custody mean? Does custody mean you're deprived your freedom? Which to me, that's what custody means. That
right.
I have been deprived of my freedom. You know, that does that mean I have to be sitting in a police station? What if it's sitting here in my office and the police come in? You know, and is that, am I now in custody when they start asking me questions? So you have to understand what does custody mean and what does interrogation mean? There's two pieces to that, right? And I don't think we've never really operationalized custodial interrogation.
Well, I always tell people, like when I'm teaching people, the young people, the people on my podcast that are listening to like share with their kids, I always tell them like, you have to be blunt because they'll claim, we had a case of a 15-year-old girl who was interrogated for 6 hours and the cops typed up a confession for her and had her sign it. And she's innocent, still in prison to this day. No parents, her mom was calling the whole time. And they just told her we're going to bring her home this whole time. And then the police, they never Mirandized her either. Never told her, you know, never gave her, told her she got a lawyer, never let her mom know where she was at. And they claimed, and this is what they'll do, is, well, she wasn't a suspect and she wasn't in custody. She could have left at any time, but you never told her that.
Mm.
So I always tell people, like, if the police ever want to talk to you, your first question out of your mouth needs to be, am I free to go? And make them answer it. Am I free to go? And if you are, then get up and leave. If they say no, then say, then I want a lawyer. Period. Those are the only things you should
do. Great advice. I'm going to start using that. That's really great.
What's interesting,
am I free to go? I've never thought about that.
Well, I've heard interrogation tapes where people have done that. And it's amazing how the police, because I mean, and I get it. They're trying to get you to talk. They don't want you to ask for a lawyer. They don't want you to get up, but how they will try to avoid that. Am I free to go? Well, what do you mean? What, you want to leave? Answer the question. Am I free to go? Why do you want to leave? Answer the question. Am I free to go? Because as you know, if they say yes, then it is now a custodial interview.
That's right.
And you have the right to remain silent.
I love that. I'm going to start using that. I mean, I really had never even thought about, am I free to go?
Yeah.
You know, I've been teaching for 35 years at this university. And before I met Timmy, I thought I had really taught my students well. And now I understand that I've really taught them about how the system is supposed to work.
Right.
And now I teach very differently, right?
You see how it actually does work.
Yeah. And I've sat on two prison boards for, gosh, almost 17 years. And I think now my seat at the table is very different. So when I hear somebody say, you know, they use the term offender, you know, often, even though I think they that's kind of a taboo word now. But I heard somebody say it the other day at an event. A correctional officer said, you know, the offenders. And I raise my hand and I say, they're not all offenders. You have people who are sitting here who are innocent and they are victims. They're all prisoners. They're all inmates, but they're not all offenders. So I sit on these boards very differently today than I did prior to meeting Timmy. So, people always say, wow, you've done so much for Timmy and you've done all this great work. I hear this from a lot of people. I'm very blessed. I've been, you know, given a lot of accolades for the work I've done in the space. But I will tell you, the reality is I've learned a lot from him.
Right.
I've learned a lot from him. You know, there's nothing in my undergrad teaching, my master's, my doctoral program that really prepared me, I think, for dealing with a wrongful conviction. That's why I created this course, Wrongful Conviction. We never had it before.
Right.
And it is a very popular course, as you can imagine. And Timmy loves that class. He comes in and the students all know Timmy.
Dr. Jackson students love the class too.
Yeah, they do love the class. And I think it really changes their mindset about what they hear on the news, what they see. Every time you see somebody arrested, that doesn't mean somebody is guilty.
Right.
Let's remember, there is always this presumption of innocence, but sadly, the media gives us a very different image. So I think, we're doing some good things here. I think I know we're doing some good things here. And it's not just helping exonerees, but it's really, I hope, helping prevent a wrongful conviction. That's really right. My goal is to prevent this from happening. We give a pretest at our police trainings, and man, no offense to the police, but it just shows that they don't even understand wrongful convictions. They fail. Mm-hmm. Every department, they pretty much fail these tests. And then we give them a post-test to see how they did after the training, and they improve for sure, but still not where we want them to be. So it just shows that we've got to continue to do these trainings, and I'd love to do them with the prosecutor's office.
Right.
We have a company right now who's very interested in us doing this police training throughout the state of Indiana. We're going to be having more conversations because we need money to do that. You know, Timmy and I work, we are a skeleton crew, as you can see. It's me and it's Timmy and students, but we are very blessed that we have a lot of people who volunteer. If any of your folks are, you know, experts in anything or just curious about anything in this space, you know, we're always here to listen and hopefully get some, you know, some support from anybody. Right now, we have law firms who are very good to us and work with us pro bono. We have agencies who work with us. We have a pastor Michael Pirtle, who is a rock star. He just received an award from us. Pastor Pirtle helps us with the post-exoneration piece. He helps us help exonerees, you know, find jobs and other, and even like housing and things like that. Pastor Pirtle's just amazing. So we use all of our networks that we can, because this is not just him and I, it's a tribe. And it really does take we all of us here, it takes a village. It truly does take a village. And it's people who truly care. And I always get asked, what can I do to help? What can we do? Well, we will talk to anybody who's interested in our work and try to figure out what is it that we can do. Before winter break, we got a box in the mail. Timmy and I just presented at a foundation luncheon. They were bringing chairs in at a luncheon. It was so packed in there because people wanted to understand more about wrongful convictions. Some lady sends me a box and said, I heard your presentation, and these are some clothes from my husband. I mean, he was really thoughtful, you know, really thoughtful. The problem, what people don't understand is, as you can see, we have limited space.
Yeah.
Now, one box is great. But when people say, well, I want to donate all this clothing, where will Timmy and I keep all this clothing?
Hey.
It's like I was on the shelter for two shelters of two domestic violence shelters. They're boards for years. And people always would say, I want to donate all my clothes. I'd be like, how much closet space do you have in your house?
Right.
It's the same kind of logic. But we always need help. We ask for help.
Well, that's how I wanted to get it, to wrap things up. And for my listeners, hopefully if things go well with this case we've been discussing all day today, you'll be hearing more from Dr. Jackson and Timmy as we move along over these next few months. But for now, I want to leave with that. I think you guys are doing amazing work.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed Eric and I both here, spending here with you guys today, seeing the work that you're doing. Is there a place for, I have listeners all over the world, and I'm sure I have people here in Northwest Indiana that maybe want to volunteer and help. But for anybody that wants to, I know you guys need funding like any other. Is there a place or a way where people could donate if they want to be able to help out your organization?
There is. So the easiest thing, and this is what I tell all my friends, is Google CJPAPNW, and it will pop up our site. And at the bottom, there's a donate link. So it's, you know, our website is, it's so long because our title is so long.
Yeah.
So I just tell people Google CJPAPNW. It pops up and there's a donate link at the bottom.
We'll make it easy for them. Erica will put a link to that right in the description of the episode.
I
too.
Really
you can scroll
it.
Down and link to
thank
that.
You. Thank you so much.
And with that, thanks for having us, guys. I'm sure we'll be in touch. We're going to go ahead and wrap things up here.
We're so excited that you're here. I mean, I've heard so much about you. So we feel Timmy and I are very honored. We're humbled, truly, that you are here. And I just want to say thank you for doing the work you're doing, because there aren't a lot of people out there who truly care. I get very emotional. He knows I cry.
Zach's going to love you, my co-host. He's a crier.
I want to personally, I really thank you. I appreciate the work you do.
It's my pleasure. Thanks
a lot. That's so sweet. I mean, and what was so neat in the police trainings was watching the police officers come up to Timmy, shake his hand and apologize to him. I will tell you, that was really moving for me to see that happen, because how do you give back a man 24 years of his life? You can't.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.